Hello and welcome back to This Expat Life. I am joined in the digital studio by Candice Gallagher. And Candice is a marketer turned content creator and founder. With 150,000 followers on social media, she shares honest and very humorous observations about modern dating under the account name Candalicious. And along the way, she founded Singlepour, a dating event company to help singles meet offline. And she also offers consulting services to dating companies and exhausted daters. And she most recently launched the 30 Girls Club, an events company for women of all ages to feel less alone, something we as expat women know all about. Her career has seen her move from fashion in New York to fintech in Singapore. And most recently, she relocated to London for her third act, working full-time in the business of dating. Welcome, Candice.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure to be here.
I'm very happy that you're here. When I saw your profile popping up on my feed in Instagram, I was like, oh my God, I need to speak to her because there were so many things that you were talking about that, were so relatable to me as an expat living abroad, dating abroad, returning home. So I'm really glad that you're on the show. And just for our listeners, where are you calling in from?
I'm back in London now. After 18 plus years of living away, I decided it was time to try being an English girl in England again. So I'm calling from London.
Good luck with that. So, where have you spent those 18 years?
It started when, so I was born in England, in London, and my parents moved us to Singapore when I was 8. So that we did 2 years in Singapore, 6 in Hong Kong, and then my parents have lived in New York ever since. I spent a lot of time in New York. I spent my whole 20s in New York. I lived in Switzerland. And then most recently, I've been living in Singapore. I spent the last 5-ish years living in Singapore. So very much got like expat, third culture kid blood running through my veins. And that experience is also, I really believe, has shaped me as who I am and how I choose to live my life.
Yeah, absolutely. And so now being in the UK is almost like another time abroad for you, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And in all honesty, I had a bit of a like identity crisis about whether or not to come back to London because I had been overseas for so long. It was such a proud part of my identity to be able to say like, "Oh, I'm an English girl, but I live in this other country." I felt like cool and proud. And so when I started thinking about whether it was time to move to England, it was really emotionally fraught for me. Like I really was digging deep. And I think a big part of that was, am I a failure if I give up this international life and move back to where I come from? And even though intellectually and rationally I knew it wasn't a failure, emotionally I just really, really struggled with the idea of returning home. And I also was scared about what would I be if I was just an English girl in England? Am I just like everybody else? What makes me special, in all honesty? So I had to do a lot of soul searching and conversation with friends, and then and also I was kind of waiting for that aha moment. I'm a very instinctual person, and it just wasn't obvious to me which way I should go. And then one day I had my aha moment, and I said, "It's time. It's time to go back to England."
There's already so much I want to ask about this whole thing. So how does your aha moment look for you?
I believe that there are, in my life, there are four key pillars: love life, family, friendship, and work. And like a stool, you can stand on a three-legged stool. It's really, really unstable if you've only got two or one. And there happened to be, it was like the perfect storm. There happened to be, all in one weekend, three of those pillars took a hit. I basically bumped into somebody that I used to date. We still had a nice relationship, but it was just sort of a reminder of like how dating in Singapore was really difficult. I bumped into a friend who was so important to me, and she ghosted me. We talk about ghosting in relationships, but we don't talk about friendship breakups and how destabilizing and emotionally fraught those can be. So there was the love pillar, the friend pillar, and then the third pillar, sort of around my home. I'd been debating, okay, maybe I could sublet my apartment over the summer and then create some space, allow me to have the space to figure out what it was that I wanted to do, and then come back. And the tenant that I had planned to live there during the summer fell through. And I was like, this is just too much in one weekend. I was like, enough. I just want to stop trying so hard to make this life work. I just want to take it easy for a little bit. And in all honesty, I think coming home has been a real break, honestly. I don't feel like I'm trying so hard to build this life anymore.
Okay, wow, so interesting. So many of the listeners are also thinking about, they keep thinking about their decision and they're waiting for that aha moment. So it's really nice that you untangle that a little bit for us, how it looks for you, because it also helps them to see, like, oh yeah, this is enough for me to make a decision about, I'm leaving or I'm staying perhaps as well.
And it totally varies, right? Like, I'm an instinctual person, so that aha moment was what I was waiting for. There are other times when I made the decision to move to Singapore, it was just like a no-brainer. I had just finished a master's degree, I had no job, I didn't have an official residence anywhere, and I was like, right, I'm going to Singapore. It was like, I didn't even think twice about it. I bought a one-way ticket, no job, and I just went and got a job. So I had it easy deciding to move to Singapore, and then I had it really difficult choosing to leave Singapore. And I will also add, I have a lot of admiration for people who move to a country that they have no association with. I moved back to Singapore because I realized that the experience of living there as a kid had greatly shaped me. And I wanted to experience that as an adult and see if it had the same impact on me. So I already had a familiarity and a great comfort level with Southeast Asia in general. So it didn't feel scary to me to move there. Had you said to me, move to Brazil, that would have been way more fraught for me because I've never even visited as a tourist. I've never been there. I don't know anything about the culture so much. So I have a lot of respect and admiration for people who can go to a completely brand new country and be like, right, I have no idea how this is going to go, but let's see what happens.
Yeah, and it's true. Expats have a lot of courage for doing those things. And I have to remind them sometimes as well, like, hey, you possess this quality because you already moved here to this brand new country. Don't forget you have this courage also for other things in your life, for your relationships, for your career moves, whatever. That's the part where they don't feel that courage sometimes, but they already prove that they have it.
It's so funny to hear you say that because I, even as you say that now, I don't feel like I was courageous. You know, I think a lot of us, maybe also when you're very independent and ambitious, you're just sort of like, right, let's go and do the next thing. But we don't give ourselves credit. Oh, that was actually really entrepreneurial, or that was really courageous, or that was really brave. So even I sometimes feel a bit of disconnect that the idea that I was courageous, but I'm like, no, actually, I kind of was. Even
You
I
were,
can't
yeah.
believe it.
And I've seen you like on Instagram, the things that you launched, the things that you started, Singapore, now the 30 Girls Club. I'm like, wow, that is so amazing. She makes these bold moves because she experiences a gap somewhere in her own life. And so she takes action on bridging that gap also for other people. And I would love to talk a little bit more. I mean, I can talk about many things, I think, with you about moving back home and all these different chapters in your life and entrepreneurship. But I would love to talk with you about dating abroad and also dating back home again. Maybe can you take us through the journey of why you started Singapore and what led you to this third act of being in the dating business now?
It honestly, it was a pure accident. So I, when I was living in Singapore, I found myself making a lot of content. I just literally downloaded TikTok one day. I was in hotel quarantine when it was the thick of COVID in Singapore. To enter Singapore, you had to do 2 weeks of hotel quarantine where you couldn't leave the hotel room. And in an effort to stay sane, I was like, okay, I'll work out every day and I'll make a TikTok video every day and just see what happens. And then I got totally hooked. And then over the next sort of, because that was COVID, over the next sort of 3 years, I liked to talk about whatever was going on in my life. So for a long time, people were like, oh, what type of content do you make? I'm like, whatever's on my mind, whatever I'm going through. You know, it wasn't beauty focused or fashion focused. And over time, dating, and we can definitely get into it, is like highs and lows. It's like the roller coaster of dating, like the on again, off again thing. And I was just so exhausted. But I realized, I was like, okay, but I really want to find somebody. Dating is a crap experience. How can I make it more enjoyable for myself? And so I said, okay, well, I like making content. Why don't I start vlogging about the experience of dating? And I set myself a challenge. I said, okay, I burn out on dating apps because it's just sort of endless swiping with this never-ending timeline. Why don't I try 10 dating apps in 10 weeks, one dating app a week, and talk about the experience? So for me, that involved what was nice is it was very structured. It wasn't endless, and I was having fun making the content. And it turns out the content was performing because it was resonating with other people. And I think what's interesting about it is it resonates with whether you're single or you're in a relationship or you're coming out of a relationship. Because the single people are like, oh yeah, I'm going through that too. The people in relationships are like, oh, is that what it's like on the other side? Maybe the grass isn't greener. Maybe I am in a happy relationship. And so I just ended up sort of naturally evolving into talking about dating. I did 10 dating apps 1 year. The next time I tried 10 dating events, and I wouldn't ever reveal my date, but I would say clues about them. So I'll be like, today I'm going on a date with the lawyer and I'm really excited and blah, 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 blah. And then like maybe they would go to the bathroom and I'll be like, he's gone to the bathroom. It's going really well. I really fancy him. Let's see where the date goes. And then what happened is I had made the decision last summer to leave Singapore. But I saw a video from a group in the US called Matchbox, and it just looked really cool. So I made a very casual TikTok video being like, hey, Singapore, there's this dating event concept where everyone comes together, they take a questionnaire, the questionnaire matches them based on long-term compatibility and value alignment. Anyone in Singapore think this is cool? Should we bring it here? The video blew up, and next thing you know, I'm running a dating event business. And it really wasn't intentional. Like I had in the second day the Google form crashed for people signing up, and within a week I had 4,500 people on the wait list. And that shows you like how much demand there is for in-person experiences. Like people are so fatigued of dating apps and ghosting and the anonymity of it, but even like the hangover from COVID when we were stuck inside for so long. And so I sort of very accidentally launched this dating event company called Singlepore
I
for
love
single
their name.
Singaporeans. I mean, it couldn't be better, even if I do say so myself. And since then, I've hosted 13 events, and I've flown back twice since I moved back to England to host
I
events.
saw that,
So
yeah.
it's
So
such a happy accident.
have people found their partner now through these events?
I was just back a couple of weeks ago, and two people messaged me saying that they had found their partner at one of my events. And it just made me so happy because that's what it's about. Like, I love a good love story. Like, I love reading wedding announcements and hearing how couples met. So the idea that I played a hand in them finding each other is a great honor.
That's amazing. Okay, so let's dive a little bit more into your own dating experience because I'm super curious. When you were living abroad, were you dating mostly locals or expats?
Majority were expats, but there were some locals, but it was majority expats. And I think there's a few reasons for that. One, there's the cultural reality. It seems all over Asia. You'll see much more frequently expat men dating Asian women, but you don't see it the same way around, the opposite way around. And I think that's part just sort of like cultural norm that not that many people are shaking up. But I also think it's preference. Like, I really think if you are an expat woman who moves independently to the other side of the world, you're not going to settle for being less than what you should be, like being your greatest self. And in a very stereotypical way, as a very stereotypical statement, I should say, Singaporean men have a bit of a reputation for wanting a wife who will be a mother to them, who will look after them, stay at home, and take care of them. I didn't move to the other side of the world. I didn't to be a stay-at-home mum. There's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it, but that's not what I want to do. And so there wasn't a lot of interaction with Singaporean men outside of the workplace. I mean, I'm just talking romantically. And there wasn't a lot of draw from them to me or me to them. And so what ended up happening is I ended up largely dating expat men. And in all honesty, I largely dated English expat men.
Oh, interesting.
I like English boys, and that's part of the reason why I moved back to England. Go fishing in my own pond again.
Okay, cool. And Did you see any differences? I assumed you were also dating in New York in your 20s.
Oh, yeah.
Where else did you say you lived
In
later on?
Switzerland,
Yeah,
Switzerland.
Switzerland. What are the differences like? Not so much about the men, but perhaps also about dating itself in these different countries.
Yeah. Dating in New York is a Olympic sport because it is, I mean, New York is everything that you think it is. Like it's busy and exciting, and there's so much to see and do, and it's go, go, go. But that also trickles into how people navigate that space. So that's down to, it feels hectic walking across Grand Central Station because suddenly everyone's hectic and suddenly you're just caught up in the crowd too. And I think in the dating capacity, everyone, there's so much to do and so much to see and so many new people to meet. Everyone's like, onto the next, onto the next, onto the next. And so they're willing to date like a sport and date four, five people in a week. And that's not what I'm interested in. I kind of have this sort of slow but fast dating preference where I'm not in a rush and I don't like the quantity of dating that it is the reality of being on a dating app. Yet when I find somebody that I like, be it a romantic or a friendship capacity, I like to go fast and make up for lost time. It's like, oh my God, I found you. I want to know everything about you. Let's hang out all the time. And I recognize that that's kind of intense, but that's just how I like to be. And so New York, I didn't have, I had much better success dating in Singapore than I did in New York. And the irony is I'm also half American. So I actually, in theory, should be able to really easily connect with Americans, but I think such a fundamental part of what allows me to form relationships of any kind is humor. And American humor is very different to British humor. And so that's why I had a hard time finding people who I found funny and vice versa.
Yeah, I totally get that. Okay, and what about Switzerland?
Switzerland, I feel like I can't really answer because I was doing this super intense MBA that was like 6 days a week. And I tried the dating apps a little bit, but nothing really took off. And maybe I'm not of interest to Swiss people at all. But I will be honest and admit that I walked into that MBA thinking, oh, this is the moment that I'm going to find him and live happily ever after. Because we are at the stage in our life where we're looking for a change and we've chosen an MBA at this school in this country. We're going to be doing this intense experience. There's people from all over the world. We're going to live happily ever after. And I really walked in the door with that hope, but really that expectation. And I had to, it's my own fault because I made up that scenario in my head, but I had to let go of that while I was there and, like, in a way, like mourn the idea or mourn the hope. And then I had to be like, okay, he's not here. Let's just have fun and accept that this is not the year that I find the love of my life.
Yeah, that mourning is also part of the dating process after,
Oh.
you know, a situationship that fails again. I recently was in one, and letting go of the idea that you had for yourself with this
Absolutely.
person, oh, it's so
It's
annoying.
so hard
It's hard.
because we also, I think we also fill in the gaps, right? Like, they said one thing, and then we're like, oh, but let me also imagine all these other things that are similar to what they said. And then we imagine this fantasy of living happily ever after with them. But that's why people say, like, if he wanted to, he would. And like, let people show you who they really are. Don't like make it up yourself. And I am really guilty of not following that advice.
Same. Same, yeah. It's hard, yeah. I try to be mindful of it now more and more, but it's hard to really do that in the process.
Yeah. And it's hard to not also become jaded by it because the trying and maybe having a little glimmer of an opportunity and then it falling
Absolutely.
apart, it like knocks you down
It does.
time and time again. And you're like, why do I keep trying? And I can't tell you the number of women, specifically women who've messaged me recently saying, I had enough. I had enough of feeling the rejection or feeling sad. And so I've stopped altogether and now I feel so liberated. And I'm seeing more and more of that happening around me.
I see that also on Instagram, like people who go a year without dating and stuff like that. So, yeah, I was thinking about it. Maybe I should try that myself, but I'm not ready to give it up yet. But
Exactly.
it's the pain of being rejected or the pain of it not working out, and it's just, you know, it stacks on top of each other, and it's just so hard to, you know, gather all your energy again and your enthusiasm and to go in there without any expectation. good or bad expectations. Yeah, it is hard.
Yeah, because it's also that's like the fun of falling in love. It's like you get carried away in the moment, and why, and as an optimistic person, why wouldn't I feel optimistic about where this relationship could potentially go? But
The last times you got carried away, you ended up falling pretty hard. So at
I
least for
fall
me.
so hard, yeah. I fall so hard, but I recently really realized it's so obvious. It seems obvious to say, but I recently realized that the times I fall the hardest are over the men who are not at all available to me. Like, and I've been with them a tiny amount. Like, I went on one date, but it was so intense, and then I never hear from them again. And that's when I get emotionally fraught. When I like dated someone for 6 weeks and there was good communication and it ended naturally, I was like, okay, that was good. Didn't work out, no problem, let's move on. So it's always the unfulfilled ones that get me the most, and that's what I'm trying to like juggle, step away
Oh,
from.
I understand it. It's hard. So something that I've been really struggling with, I would use that word, is that I feel like such a global citizen. I'm now back in my home country in a relatively, it's a relatively big town, but it's small for international standards. It's a bit of a sleepy town. It's nice and quiet. And like you said at the beginning, I identify as a really international person. I also want to move abroad again this or next year. And I am now dating here in The Hague. And it's hard for me to find the person. I'm 37, the person who's perhaps a bit older than me, wants the same things, has the same values, and also knows that international life well enough or is willing to explore it further. So I'm just really curious about your experience regarding that and how you view that for yourself, also now that you moved back home again.
As I was leaving Singapore, I remember saying to myself, I'll be back. I'm just going to go and find him, have some babies, and then I'm going to bring all of us back. That's really the dream for me. And I also find it hard to imagine being attracted to and being interested in a man who isn't internationally minded. He doesn't necessarily have to have lived abroad yet, but he has to be at least invested in traveling and curious about the idea of living abroad. Look, but I also recognize that that's not for everybody. And moving abroad is a lot, and people have aging parents and practical realities that make it challenging. But that is something that I also really look for. And even I have to keep myself honest. Like, it's so easy on a dating app to be like, oh, I don't like his shoes in this picture, I'm going to say no. But I have to like say to myself, oh, but he talks about travel and he's actually got pictures from three different parts of the world. He really does like travel. That I talk about the things that I want, and then sometimes they're presented to me and I'm like, oh, I'm not interested in him. But I'm like, no, hold on. Let's give him a shot. There's a picture of him in Singapore. Go on a date with him. So yeah, and I will also say, like, what's been very interesting is the relationships that I have had were always with Englishmen in England and ended up in long distance relationships. Most of them was when I was young, and then I moved to the US. And I recognize, like, long distance relationships are crap for everybody. It's not a fun experience. But what makes them possible is if you have an end goal in mind, like, it's a year until the other person can join the first person. And also, what I've noticed is if both people are expat kids or expats in general, they understand why it's important for that other person. Because it takes a lot to be like, why are you moving over there away from me? Like, I understand if you've never experienced expat life, why it doesn't make any sense. And I think a good example of that was all my relationships, they were wonderful, well-traveled men, but they were all Brits and they just didn't quite understand why I wasn't moving home. And those relationships ended. My sister and her partner, he's also an expat kid, and she ended up moving to New York for about a year and then deciding to stay 2 years. And he said, cool, that's what you want, we'll make it happen. And they're still together and they're getting married this summer. So obviously that's a nice love story, but I do think that, we're just cut differently, like our resilience, our courage, all of those things. And I think like attracts like. And so that's ultimately what it comes down to, finding people who just have the same outlook on life as you.
And that's hard. I put in my profile, my dating profile as well, like I'm a global citizen, I want to move abroad again, and the guys just read over it. So I was on a date with someone and I asked him, "Do you want to move abroad again?" Because he was an international living here. He's like, "Oh, hell no, I'm staying here." I'm like, "Okay, then we're not a match." It's not going to work.
That's really interesting because for me, my immediate, oh, I like his profile, but if I see this one thing, I immediately say no, is if he doesn't want children. No, I respect it, but that to me is a deal breaker. It's almost like, how do you make that equally as clear to somebody else that your deal breaker is also living overseas?
Okay, so this is super interesting. And I'm also curious because you at some point you decided to leave Singapore, and were you still dating at that time after your decision?
I feel like I've gone on again, on off again. I can't even remember. I think at that time there was nobody that I was dating. Yeah, there was definitely nobody that I was leaving behind, and there wasn't any opportunity on the table. And I quite naturally filled that space, that like love for love, with the dating event company Singapore instead. So there wasn't. And I tell you, and I'll this I feel is sort of a very honest thing to say. I can't help but feel a little bit validated when I have other friends who stayed in Singapore after I left now telling me that they're also leaving. For different reasons, right? Like the job market is harder, the getting a visa is harder. But even especially when I hear British men, I have a few British guy friends who are leaving Singapore because they're also fed up with the dating. And that really makes me feel validated, because it's very easy when you make a decision, like I talked about, like have I failed by giving up? It's very easy to feel like it's all about you and like you couldn't make something happen. So when other people also say that, I'm like, ah, oh, it is difficult. It's kind of like, it's nice to hear.
You're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I was curious also if you have any tips or how you navigated if you did that. If you know you're going to be somewhere for 1, 2, 3 years, perhaps. I know, like, I always dated, even when I decided to move to Rio for 6 months last year, I was still dating prior in The Hague. And I was very clear about it, but I also was very clear in my own head, like, if this is the love of my life, I'm willing to change the 6 months to 2 or 3 months, you know? So I'm very open to dating. But I know a lot of people are a bit hesitant, whether it's about dating or investing in a gym membership or investing in something else, because they feel like, oh, I'm only here for a couple of months or 1 year, 2 years max. So they hold themselves back. How do you see that?
I give you a good example. There is a members club in Singapore that I kind of got exposure to early on and just didn't think about joining because I didn't need to, because my friends were members and I was like, I'll just freeload off them. And then in what ended up being in my last the start of my last year, I remember saying to myself, okay, you've got one more year on the lease. You're not feeling right. You've got one more year on your lease. Let's give it everything for 1 year and then see what happens. Like, then you can leave with your head held high and say, I tried, but it didn't work. And one of the decisions at that point was, do I join that members club? And again, it stopped me because, in this case, it stopped me because of the money. It was like, I don't know, $4,000 to join and a few hundred dollars every month. And I was like, oh no, but if I'm leaving in a year, I've just wasted $4,000. But then, had I done that, that might have changed the trajectory of my experience there because I would have been going and meeting new people and doing lots of activities. So I will say that is one of the things that I regret not doing, is joining a members club earlier. And I see my friends who did it and I see how much it paid off for them. Everything else, like a phone contract or like a gym contract, you can get out of those easily. So I feel like those you just kind of get on with. But I think on the dating front, I have a lot of admiration for people who go on holiday for a week and swipe on the dating apps. That's just not me. I am like, I want the emotional, I want the love from day one. Like, I need the real emotional connection. So that's not for me. But I think there are plenty of people who do it, and I think the honesty is the huge part of it. And that phrase, which just really annoys me to be told as a single person, like it'll happen when you're not looking, has some truth in it. I think when you're just sort of like, okay, who knows how long this is going to be, but let me try anyway, and let me commit to the things that are realistic to commit to. And so I think you just have to. And I think is that what you counsel or you advise your clients to, like get the gym membership and get the phone contract and do
Yes,
all those
usually
things?
yes. I mean, I really coach them, and they are in the lead, so I'm never going to say what they should be doing. But if it's like I always one general advice is like, don't put your life on hold. If you enjoy certain things, but the only thing that's holding you back is the question whether you will be here in a year's time or 6 months from now, take that out of the equation. Just enjoy your life, live it to the fullest, because it might exactly change the the trajectory of your life. So, and how you experience it. So yeah, that's something I definitely advise, and I always go full in with everything as well. It makes my life richer.
There's this phrase that I really love that says, I want to get to the end of my life and have with lived the width of it, not just the length.
Yes, that's
And I
beautiful.
think that is such a great way to make sure that you are living the fullest life that you can, either like when you're in the experience, like saying yes to everything. But for me, for my whole life, that has also meant taking breaks from work. Like I've
Yeah.
taken, right now I'm sort of in this in-between zone, but coming up on a year off full-time work, I've taken multiple sabbaticals in my life. And like that to me is when my life gets full. It's when I like, I'll give you a good example. I was working in the US. I was working there for about 8 years. My MBA was starting in the January, and I left the job in the October so I could travel October, November, December before I started the MBA in the January. Because I just needed that reset button and that new energy source to come into my
Yeah,
life.
yes.
And that's like the travel bug, but that's what happens when you just, that's to me, that's what the benefit of being an international person is, you get this input of creativity and ideas and
Yeah.
separation from like whatever you were stuck in. So I think it's
Yeah, I love
important.
this influx of new energy. You need it sometimes in your life to start a new chapter. Yeah. Oh, I have to say, I was thinking about it when you shared about those four pillars that started to wobble. My biggest decisions have always, not always, but have very often come from failed situationships or relationships. And everything else was also like a couple of weeks ago, I found myself crying again on the plane because I didn't want to go back home. I was crying over a boy. And I was like, oh, I've been in this situation before that I was crying on a plane, not wanting to go back home. It's time for change. And so it always feels to me like these setbacks that all come together at some point, it marks the end of something, but also really brings in this new energy to start that new chapter. So yeah,
I
travel
feel you.
can be one way, but other events in your life can generate that too, that energy.
There's also this other reference where it said, imagine you're like a, you're an alien, right? You're from another universe. And they say, hey, I'm going to send you to this place called Earth for 85 years, and you are going to experience joy and energy and excitement and travel and all of these wonderful things, but you're also going to feel sad and you're going to feel angry and you're going to feel a lot of really crappy feelings. You can't have one without the other. Would you still go? And the answer is always yes. Because the good is because you also know what the bad is, right? Like, I know what living overseas can do for me, and I also know what it cannot do for me because I've had those moments, like many moments, just being alone on a Sunday, feeling like I don't have any friends, and being bored of going to the same museum again. Like, that is where the resilience and the independence comes from. And the irony is that the more I do it, the longer I go being able to keep picking myself up and keep living an independent life, the harder I think it is to find somebody who can fit into that life. And I'm willing to let someone in.
So let's talk about that because I'm 37 and a lot of my listeners are also mid late 30s. They're single, high achieving women. I got a good life. They're smart, successful, independent, good looking, they've got it all except for the partner. And same for me. I don't have it. I think I want to have kids. I'm not entirely sure yet, but I do also feel like it's got to happen in the next few years. My track record hasn't been that great. So I'm like, I'm an optimistic person by nature, so I always have hope for the future. But a lot of women that I talk to are also like, will I ever find him? And they find themselves sitting on Sunday afternoon at home alone again, abroad with the same circle of friends that they always had, tired of going to the same museum, and they're like, when is he coming into my life? And then also having to deal with the reality of dating. So you have that resilience and picking yourself up again and that positivity, but how do you do that practically, or what kind of advice do you have for these women that are in that same boat?
Girl, I see you. I feel you. I've done it. I've had that feeling a million times over. And it is so exhausting. It is so like, you wouldn't keep doing the same thing that giving you a crappy result. You would change. But this is like the one thing. I can conquer everything else, but this is the one thing I can't seem to conquer. It's taking much longer to conquer. What do I do? And look, I get upset by it all the time. I think the first thing is I do is I just feel it. Like I feel sad. When I feel sad, I feel sad. When I want to cry, I want to cry. I have no shame, even in the privacy of my own home, about having those feelings. And I find that just sort of sitting in it really helps me a lot. Two, I talk about it. I share my feelings so much, I tell the internet about what I'm feeling. I know that's not for everybody. But I often actually talk out loud. Like if I'm feeling, especially if I'm physically alone and like let's say a date didn't work out or whatever, and I'm literally just sitting at home crying, I'll say out loud to myself, why am I so upset? I'm so upset because I imagined that that was going to go somewhere. Well, why did I imagine that was going to go somewhere? Because we only went on a date once, and is that really realistic? Well, what can I do differently next time? And I basically just have a conversation with myself just to like honor the feelings, but also try and bring a little bit of rationality into it. And then I'm just an optimistic person, and sort of I just have this unwavering knowledge that I will find the right person for me. Like I had a friend when we were at university and we were graduating, and she was really upset because she thought she was going to find her husband at university. Her parents found her husband at university. Some of our friends found their husband at university, and she was really upset that she didn't find it because that was the timeline she had imagined for herself. And then look what happened. She found him in a hotel. They were both on business trips, and now they're happily married with two kids. And like the annoying part is it doesn't happen on the timeline that we want. And at this stage in late 30s, it's even more annoying that it seems like everybody else is finding it except us. Like that's really what it feels like, everybody else. And most recently with my social media content, I've been shifting a lot more to talking about the experience of being a woman who's single in her 30s. And I cannot tell you the number of women who are messaging me being like, oh my God, I thought I was the only one left. I thought I was the only one. Thank you for speaking about it like this. And that's kind of the crazy thing, is like there are so many things that everybody experiences, but nobody is talking about openly. We're talking about it in the privacy of our home, but nobody is talking about it openly. So that's something that I feel very proud to be doing, to be like, I'm sharing the human experience, but I'm just doing it on a stage that a lot of other people, and I'm seeing that it's helping a lot of other people feel less alone. So I
Absolutely.
guess it would be like, feel it. Then when you're less in the emotion, like take a bit of a rational approach to it. And then just, if you believe it will happen, just always come back to that belief.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, and final, well, almost final question. How do you keep making space for that person to come into your life? Because you said like you're independent and you pick yourself up every time and you live your life. How do you consciously make space for him?
I don't know. That's actually a good question. I was also thinking just yesterday, I was like, do I know how to be? I said at first, do I know how to be in a relationship anymore? Like, I'm so out of practice. I've been single for over 10 years. I'm so out of practice, do I know? But then I said to myself, I have deep, deep friendships. I have friendships that I haven't lived in England for the last 18 years, and I saw both of them on the weekend because they are that important to me. So, like, there sort of this idea of a romantic relationship is put on a pedestal as this sort of be all end all. It's a desire that I have, but it's not the be all end all. And really what it's about is about finding people who speak your language, who fill your cup. And so I have to remind myself that I know how to be a good friend, and people always say that your partner should be your best friend. I know how to be a good friend. I fully admit that I'm going to struggle when the time comes with making space and compromising. I have no doubt about that because I've done everything that I want for so long. Even moving back in with my sister after years of living alone, I was like, oh, okay, I have to adapt to being with someone else. But when it's with the right person, it doesn't feel like a compromise. You're like, oh, you need that? Okay, I'll give you that. Or you need space? I'll give you that space. So I think when the time comes, I think the space will just naturally happen. That's how I feel. I don't feel like I have to prepare for it. And I think also just flagging, like, look, I'm a very independent woman, and if I'm pissing you off, or you're pissing me off, let's talk about it and just have some space, you know?
Cool. Very nice. Oh, I could talk for hours with you, I think, about this topic. But I have one final question for you, and that's a question I ask to all my guests on the podcast. That is, what is your tip to make living abroad better or easier or more fun?
I think one thing is always coming from a place of yes and curiosity. I think living abroad, what's such as this beautiful sweet spot between being a tourist and having, we're on holiday for a week, let's do everything energy, and being a local in the sense that you live there. And it's this magical space that is worth taking advantage of. And so I think that's what it would be. It's like, go and, you know, they say a tourist knows your city better than you do. Go and be the expat who knows the city better than the locals. And go on all those trips and meet all those people. And along the way, you will meet people who are like, I really don't enjoy your company, but you're the only person that I know right now, and so I will hang out with you. And maybe that will introduce me to somebody else who is way more my kind of person. But I think just sort of take advantage of that magical space between being a tourist and being a local.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and we should not take that for granted. I agree. Yeah, cool. Candice, I'm sure people after listening to this episode will want to know where to find you so they
Thank
can
you.
stay up to date on your love life and the tips that you have and the things that you are organizing. So where can people find you?
Thank you. Yeah, I go by the handle Candelicious on Instagram and TikTok, and so I talk a lot about dating and my life returning to England. And then I guess specifically if you're in the UK, literally just last week I've accidentally launched something else called the 30 Girls Club, which is all about bringing women together so they can stop feeling less lonely, and specifically women who are single. So again, also on social media. So if you go on my Instagram, candelicious.insta, you can find it all there.
Great. I'll put the links in the show
Thank
notes as
you.
well.
That's
Thank
great.
you so much, Candice, for
My
being
pleasure. Thank
here.
you
I
for
love the
talking to me.
conversation. Thanks. Oh, that was such a nice interview with Candice. I really, really appreciated her openness about something that so many of us struggle with as well, but we do that silently. So I really enjoyed having her on the show, and I hope you did too. If you liked what she said, if you got an aha moment, if she gave you some inspiration, do let us know because we love hearing what this episode did for you. And then lastly, if you find yourself in the same position that Candice was talking about in the beginning, when different pillars in her life started to wobble and they all came together in that one weekend that led to her aha moment of, okay, I need to leave Singapore. If you are in that same situation where you feel a decision needs to be made on your career, on your location, on your relationships, or you just find yourself trapped in overthinking and scenario mapping all the time, well, first of all, know that you're not alone. And second of all, that aha moment is within reach. In my signature program, The Copilot, I will help you make faster, better, more aligned, and more confident decisions without constant overthinking, so that you can also take confident action on it. And this is when your expat life will start to feel as good as it looks from the outside. Doors are opening again on June 30th, and right now you can get on the priority list. And if you are on that priority list, it means you will get an exclusive offer to join the Copilot. And it's an offer I'll only be sending out to those VIPs on the list. There are no strings attached. You will just get a few emails from me when the time is there, shortly before doors open for everyone else. And that means that you'll also be the first to get access to an exclusive bonus that I will only offer for the first 10. So if you find yourself in front of a decision in your expat life, or you're tired of the constant overthinking, get on the priority list for the Copilot and we'll talk again in June. Have a great day. Bye-bye.